Be safe. Be strong. Don't give in to hate. And we'll see you next week.
Second every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Co-sponsor the 46th annual Delta Park Powwow and Encampment taking place from Friday, June 17th through June 19th at Delta Park East in Portland. The 46th annual Delta Park Powwow and Encampment is presented by the Bow and Arrow Culture Club. This year features competition dancing, exhibitions, arts, crafts, and food vendors, and much more. Grand entries take place Friday at 7, Saturday at high noon and 7 p.m., and Sunday at high noon. Again, that's the 46th Annual Delta Park Powwow and Encampment, June 17th through June 19th at Delta Park East, 10774 North Union Court in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 9:01. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. Here's what we have coming up for you this morning on KBOO. First, it's Veterans Voice with host Marvin and Angie of Northwest Vets for Peace. Today, they speak with three vets from the group Veterans Challenge Islamophobia. At 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia is off today. Instead, we'll hear flashpoints with features on the continuing violence against the indigenous communities of Honduras, a federal raid on a California medical cannabis dispensary, and the launch of a global petition to protect Edward Snowden from U.S. prosecution. 11 o'clock, Michelle Schroeder-Fletcher speaks with Jana Bitten of the Oregon Center for Nursing, also Christopher Wallace of the Oregon Student Nurses Association, about the Oregon Action Coalition and the future of nursing. At 11:30, Jenka Soderberg interviews Israeli activist Dalit Baum about boycott, divestment, and sanctions, or BDS. And we thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kbu.fm and clicking on Donate. We appreciate that. And now we're going to go to Veterans Voice. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO.
We'll be right back. Welcome to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland and Northwestern Oregon, 91.9 FM Hood River in the Columbia River Gorge, plus 104.3 FM Corvallis and the Willamette Valley. And you can hear this station on the World Wide Web at KBOO.FM. And if you want to hear some of our earlier shows, you can go to KBOO.FM/Veterans Voice, one word, Veterans Voice. I'm Marvin, and back with me is Angie. Hey, Angie's back. And our guest today, Islamophobia, and we're going to be speaking with Ramon Mejia, Nate Tarani, and Jake Mayer. And but first, I got a couple of things I want to say, and then we're going to talk to these folks. I just want to say that last week, I believe, that an NPR person was killed in Afghanistan, David Gilkey, reporting the news in Afghanistan, and he's an Oregonian. He was from Oregon. And also, I wanted to talk about our LGBTQ brothers and sisters and how much we feel so bad about what happened in Orlando and how much we support our brothers and sisters in the gay community and how horrible that was and how our brothers and sisters are feeling right now, that we stand behind you 100%. And also, I heard something very, very horrible today on the radio, on NPR, I believe it was, where the State Department came out with a message that they thought that the United States government should start bombing the government of Syria, that they should start bombing Assad's troops. And I don't see where that's going to do any good at all. It's just going to cause more trouble. And I think that's very, very bad move on the part of the State Department to even mention that, that they should start bombing. It's just going to cause more trouble. It's just going to cause more death and pain. And it's just going to make that whole region explode into more violence. And I don't think it should be done. And also, when I was coming on my Facebook this morning, I saw a very, very disturbing news thing, and it was a picture of an active duty uniformed Marine, and he was pointing an automatic rifle at the camera and said that coming to a gay bar near you. And that is very, very it's just a horrible thing. And right now, I read also that the Marine Corps is going after him, and I believe another Marine who was part of that, threatening our brothers and sisters in the gay community again, is just a horrible, horrible thing. And I just think we Sunday's our gay pride parade here in Portland. I just really hope that everybody comes out and supports our brothers and our sisters in the gay community. And also something I have, and I just don't have all the information yet, and I'll get it and I'll bring it to KBOO and we'll put it on the air. There's a documentary about Brian Wilson, our brother Vietnam veteran Vietnam veteran against the war and Veterans for Peace brother, about Brian Wilson, and it's a documentary. It's going to be playing really soon here, and Becky called me, but I didn't get the all the information about it, when it's going to be played and all that. And I'll be getting that really, really soon. And as soon as I get that, I'll put it on the air here at KBOO, and maybe we'll be able to interview Brian about it soon. We'll talk to Kathleen and see if we can get some time before the showing, and we'll interview Brian about this. Brian and Mike Casey and Becky just got back from a trip to from Vietnam.
I have that information about the...
Oh, good.
It's Sunday, July 3rd, the name of this documentary is Paying the Price for Peace. It's going to be at the Clinton Street Theater, July 3rd. That's a Sunday. Tickets, $10 at the door.
And when does it start? Does it have time?
It's going to be 7 p.m., Sunday, July 3rd, 7 p.m., Clinton Street Theater, Paying the Price for Peace.
Oh, great. Great. See why I'm glad Angie's back? Because I would never...
Now everybody can actually have that information.
Yeah, because I would have never had that. I'm so glad she's back. And like I said before...
Together we make one complete brain.
One complete. Tammy, do we have the folks on the phone yet? Okay, go ahead. I'm going to let Angie take over.
Hello, Ramon, Nate, and Jake? Okay.
Is it Ramon?
Hi, Ramon.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Thanks for joining us, and we got Nate as well.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Nate.
Great. Glad you guys are here. This is really an important project, you know, the Veterans Challenging Islamophobia. It's a very, very good project, and Angie's got a lot of information to talk to you guys about.
Well, I was hoping to start with just first, if maybe we can start with Ramon, and then Nate, maybe you could speak for a couple minutes about why, how you ended up joining the military, briefly what you did, and also getting out of the military, and you've been doing some activist work and organizing in your community, and how did you come about doing that? It's kind of a mouthful, but...
So, I joined the... You know, I'm originally here from Dallas, Texas, and I joined the Marine Corps at the age of 17.
Wow.
I joined out of economic necessity. You know, I had just gotten married with my high school sweetheart. We were expecting a daughter. And I knew that I needed to provide for them. And, you know, minimum wage job wasn't going to do it. And I didn't have the grades to go to college. And, you know, so I ended up just going straight to the Marine Corps and joined in July 01, participating in the invasion of Iraq in 03. And then began to suffer from seizures very near after that. And I was med boarded during an honorable discharge and, you know, 50% disability. And, you know, I got out. I suffered a little bit afterwards, you know, alcoholism and depression and moral injury as a result of my service in Iraq and kind of just not knowing what to do in life. But I was able to pull that out, and, you know, from that downward spiral, my wife helped me out a lot. My family supported me. Mm-hmm. So I went back to college. I went to college in 2008. And since I converted, you know, it gave me a sense of peace within myself and led me to want to better the world than I had, you know, created for the Iraqi people up until that point. So that's what got me involved in activism, wanting to right the wrongs that, you know, I helped commit overseas and supported for so long. So now I dedicate my life to a just society, a more perfect union within.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and what kind of work have you done? I know you've done some pretty significant work with challenging some of the things in your own community at protests and things like that. Do you want to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, yesterday I protested inside the Trump rally here in Dallas that he had. You know, I was able to do an action alongside another brother, Salman, who's also a U.S. Marine Corps veteran and also a convert to Islam. So we were able to disrupt Trump's, you know, speech for a bit, you know, saying that we were unapologetically Muslim. I was Latino. He was a black man. And we're veterans, and we didn't support the proto-fascist, you know, white supremacist hateful rhetoric that he's, you know, espousing to the public.
Yeah. I'd like to ask Nate now how you ended up joining the military, and I did read in your bio that you were the first Muslim Honor Guard member. What has been your experience in that way?
Right. I actually grew up you know, to Iranian American parents. My family came here, grandparents first, on my mom's side in the 1960s from Iran by way of England. So I grew up Muslim, you know, in the U.S. And as a boy, you know, we went and traveled to Iran. I was about 1985, and I witnessed the war there between Iran and Iraq. And you know, I having witnessed that at such a young age, I sort of had a great idea of how lucky we are here in the U.S. in many respects. And I think, you know, by the time I graduated high school, I knew that I wanted to give something back. So it was sort of a classic sense of, you know, for lack of a better term, patriotism, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so I joined the Navy after about a semester of college. I think I was 18 when I was sworn in. And yeah, I was selected from basic training to be a member of the Navy's Presidential Honor Guard. And when I got my Yankee White, their White House clearance, they, you know, said that I was the first Muslim American to serve in that regard. You know, and it was quite an honor. I went on to serve as for the Master Chief of the Navy. And then, of course, because I speak another language, I worked, was recruited by Defense Intelligence Agency and was then called Defense Human Service. It's now called Defense Clandestine Service. Mm-hmm. And then I finished up my service with the Air National Guard, and that was about 2006. So,
I understand that you actually got kicked out of a Trump rally yourself, and you were the one that was told to get a job, I believe. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I, you know, and just to sort of, you know, I never was a person that considered being an activist or considered protesting. You know, I would sort of turn my back at that, you know, kind of quote unquote behavior. But you know, the issue for me was, you know, it was a matter of hate. It was a matter of challenging bigotry, challenging hate speech. And you know, when we did the Trump event, it wasn't about Trump. It wasn't about political parties at all. It was challenging hate speech. Mm-hmm. So we created banners that said vets to Trump and hate speech against Muslims. And we unfurled them not 50 feet away from Trump himself. And the people became, there was two of us that did it and two that sort of videotaped it on the phones and took pictures. It was Robin Perry, who's an Army, former Army intelligence officer, and then two students from ASU, Isaac Windes being one. And so, you know, we unfurled the banners. Robin went first. He went for a while before anyone noticed what the banner said. And then Secret Service and everybody sort of jumped on him, escorted him out. And, of course, all of the Trump, I mean, Ramon can attest to this, all of the Trump people then became sort of very agitated, and they started trying to pull the sign up. It went maybe a couple minutes before the Trump supporters were trying to yank it out of my hand and all that, and yelling all kinds of things. And then sort of security and sheriff's deputies descended upon me. And as I was being walked out into the crowd, that's when, you know, these Trump supporters who were rather drunk were yelling things like, get a job, you know, don't you have anything better to do? Just really just some profane things. And of course there were some reporters there that took note of that action and wrote a couple stories about it. But yeah, this idea, and it placed this idea of, you know, someone protesting or someone being an activist as being some sort of a vagrant. It's quite the opposite, because at the time I was working for, a nonprofit that was working with veterans, helping them with PTSD and traumatic brain injury. So, you know, I think in fact, it's more, you know, it's more people that do have jobs or educators like Ramon that are out there putting themselves on the line for what they believe in.
Right. Right. I have a question for Ramon. You said something that we've talked about on this show before, and that was moral injury. And can you talk a little bit about that? How you look at that, how you feel about that, and you weren't you weren't Muslim before you went to Afghanistan though, right?
No, I was in Muslim before I went to Iraq.
Oh, you were? Okay.
No, I wasn't. I converted in 2008.
Okay.
And I went to Iraq in 2003.
Oh, okay.
And for me, the way moral energy manifests, or the way I kind of began to like address this issue, was that the entire time that I was in Iraq, it was like almost a game. It was like I didn't see Iraqis as human beings. They meant nothing to me. It's like I didn't see any kind of like humanity while I was there. Like I saw glimpses of it, me actually realizing, man, like these kids are suffering, or when I saw, you know, people that were injured or people that were dead, it affected me somehow because I still recall it and I still remember it. And it's like right now I look back at Iraq and I'm like, I have friends now that are Muslim, that are Iraqi, that are Afghan. And it's like all that suffering that the people went through while I was over there, and I didn't know them, but now it's affected me because, you know, I know that I was there, and I know that that chain of events of me being able to, in, you know, participate in the invasion, to a subsequent occupation, to the, you know, fighting of the militias, to ISIS beginning to grow, and you know, in Iraq, it's like all that was a result of our invasion, and it's like, you know, I affected millions of people. And that weighs on me because, you know, someone doesn't need to just put a bullet down range and be affected by that. You know, I look at the news, and every time I know the news, like, man, the reason it's like that is because we started it. Like, we were there. We invaded this country, destroyed its infrastructure, and we allowed, you know, chaos to ensue.
Right.
Not because of the Iraqis' own fault, but because of the U.S. government's foreign policy and the way it worked.
Right. Do you think some of it had to do with your background, where you came from, to part of that moral injury? Do you think that you're Hispanic, right?
Yeah, my parents are Mexican immigrants. And,
right.
There was a kinship there because. You know, Iraq, all, you know, we're not considered part of, like, the industrial, like, you know, that powerhouse nations. You know, we're not, like, the, you know, first world or whatever. And there's a kinship to that. You know, when I was over there, a lot of people would ask if I was Arab, you know, because of my facial features or because of my skin color, because of my, like, you know, oh, you know, are you Arab? Are you Arab? And then, like, what's your name? I'm like, oh, my name is Ramon Mejia. And they would, oh, Ramon, like, there's a town in Palestine called Ramun.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, and it's like that's where I started to, you know, we have a lot of the, you know, the same cultural aspects with having to do with family, having to do with honor and loyalty and duty to one's family, and it's like all that, you know, I was able to empathize very closely with Iraqi people as a result once I started to address.
Right, because I know in Vietnam I had some buddies that were Japanese or Chinese ancestry, and they had that same problem, Ramon. They had that same problem with being in Vietnam fighting the Vietnamese, which were Asians, just as they were, and they went through the same thing that you're going through. So I know that's really hard, but what you're doing now is really, really, you know, helpful, and not only for the people in Afghanistan and Iraq and those places, but also for you and your family. It's very healing, and I know that the more work you do, the better it'll get for those folks over there, and the better it'll get for you. So, Nate, did you have the same feelings about the war?
You know, absolutely.
Being Iranian.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, absolutely. This notion of tying Iraq and Afghanistan into, you know, the actions after 9/11. Of course, now we know that this had been planned a long time before that.
Right.
And, you know, I think it became very tough to sort of watch how this unfolded for me, and it became compounded year after year that this was clearly, you know, the Islamophobia and things like that were being perpetuated just to sort of keep the wars going overseas. that there wasn't really any enemy there. There wasn't really any objective there. The objective was perpetual warfare. I don't know how much of my being Iranian played into that, but I think any American that really looks at it can see that. You know, mm-hmm. anyone around the world certainly can see that.
Right.
So I know in the popular media, the media likes to portray that veterans are homogeneously white, male, and Christian. And so what's been some of your reactions when you have conversations with people or in life in general, and they realize you're a veteran, and then they realize that you're also of the Islamic faith? Do you ever have any instances where people's minds are kind of blown, I guess? Because those...
Me or Nate?
We'll start with Nate and then Ramon.
Yeah, I remember one time, I think, you know, if you were to see me, you much like Ramon, you may guess maybe perhaps I'm Latino or maybe just, you know, Italian or something like that, I guess just appearance-wise. And I remember I was, I live in Arizona, I was in southern Arizona at the time at a feed store just picking up some bird seed. And there was an older gentleman at the cash register, and he had a really big bag of dog food, I don't know, 50 pounds. And I offered to take it out to his pickup truck for him, carry it out there. And I noticed that he had a veteran's license plate and some Marine Corps stickers. Of course, he was clearly retired. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, you're in the Marine Corps? He said, yeah. And I was wearing my, I think, a Navy ball cap. He said, yeah, you're in the Navy. And he said, what did you do in the Navy? I said, I worked at, you know, DIA. I speak Farsi, and it's Persian Farsi. And he looked at me and he said, how did a white guy come to speak that?
Whoa.
And I said, no, I said, my parents are from Iran, and I'm Muslim. And he became ashen, I remember, and he just, because he said some other things, I remember he said some other things, perhaps about Middle Easterns, I can't recall now. And so I've had people often come up to me and say things in conversation that were bigoted or xenophobic, only to have me tell them who I am, and then they sort of are taken aback by that. That happens. I don't know if that happens to Ramon. It happens to me quite often, actually.
And Ramon, how about you?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, I mean, there's some instances where people are like kind of surprised or dumbfounded, like, what? How did that happen? You know, you're Mexican and then you're Muslim also. Like, I've had it where like people, you know, are, you know, it happened one time like at a restaurant. You know, me and my wife are waiting for to get seated, and you know, my beard was a little bit longer back then, and some busboys, they're, you know, speaking in Spanish, are like, you know, they said in Spanish, like, you know, what's that? The Hispanic girl doing with Osama bin Laden, you know?
Wow.
And I responded in Spanish, like, hey, I don't understand Spanish, I'm Mexican. They're like, what? Like, you know, they're all my bad, you know? And so there's some instances where they're funny and people are kind of like taken back, and then they start kind of like asking more their questions, just wanting to understand or wanting to know more. And then I've had some, you know, negative instances where, you know, like, in Garland, we did a counter demonstration to Pamela Geller's protest there of an event. And, you know, people are, you know, yelling, and they're saying, you know, I am an Iraq veteran that gets the war shirt on. And then, you know, telling me, you know, are you Muslim? Are you Muslim? And I'm like, yeah, I'm Muslim. And they're like, you're a traitor. You deserve to get your head cut off.
Oh,
wow.
So it's, you know, I've had some stuff like that as well.
Wow. That's horrible to hear that. So how did you both get involved with Veterans Challenge Islamophobia? How did you, were you members of Veterans for Peace before that, or did you join after you got involved with this? Ramon?
So I got involved with it. I've been a member of Iraq Veterans Against the War for a few years now. Mm-hmm. And then you know, I'm here in Dallas. We participated in numerous events together, myself and the VFP chapter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Leslie, that's here in Dallas, and I would be a part because I'm part of the Muslim community, and I was close to CARE. I would help out in organizing counter demonstrations or vigils that had to do with Muslims or the Muslim community or Islamophobia.
So that became kind of a natural choice for me to be a part of Veterans Challenge Islamophobia, because I already had roots in addressing Islamophobia here in Dallas.
Yeah.
Leslie in the BFP chapter here in Dallas recommended me for this position.
Ah, great. How about you, Nate?
Yeah, for me, as things sort of started to snowball in watching the hate crimes against Muslims, around the country, whether it was mosques being firebombed or the Chapel Hill shootings or assassinations, after that particular incident, I contacted the Veterans for Peace National. I found Michael McPherson's email after the Chapel Hill, and I said, "What is Veterans for Peace doing? What are you doing to combat this rise of Islamophobia? What are you doing to keep people safe? This is not why we serve. This is not why I serve." And this is sort of the activist coming out, I guess, in me. And so I started looking into it back then. And then Michael decided that he wanted to go forward with the Veterans Challenge Islamophobia and asked me to serve on the committee initially. And of course I agreed. And so that's how I got involved in it, and forming some of those ideas on what we could do as veterans, how we can use our voice to combat xenophobia and Islamophobia.
I believe we have Jake on the line as well.
Yep, this is Jake.
Hey, Jake, welcome. I guess we're going to start, Angie's going to start asking you the same questions that she had asked Ramon and Nate earlier.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you maybe if you could just tell the listeners why you joined the military and why you left and how you got involved with Veterans Challenge Islamophobia.
Yeah, so this is Jake. Happy to be on. And I joined the military. I'm born and raised in New Jersey, very close to New York City. So when the towers fell, I was 13 years old, and you could see from a certain vantage point the smoke from where the towers had stood. And I know as a 13-year-old man, that was like a turning point in my life, or a clear division from before and after. And, you know, being so young and growing up, when they told me, not knowing any better, when they told me they hate us for our freedom, I believed that truly, because I didn't really know what else to go off of. So that made me want to serve my country. And then the Marine Corps has this aura of making a man out of you. So, you know, as a young man, that was too hard to resist. So that, combined with my patriotism, kind of got me to join. And I went to college, did ROTC, and ended up commissioning as an officer in the Marine Corps. And I got out of the Marine Corps, and this kind of, the Orlando shooting kind of ties in a lot of my reasons for getting out, because I got discharged as a conscientious objector.
Oh, good for you.
Thank you. It was certainly interesting. But during my time as an officer and paying attention to my Marines, some of whom were LGBT, I realized that even though it was 2014, and Don't Ask, Don't Tell had been repealed for at least 3 years, there were still problems, and there were still discrimination, and there were still actually issues with the military equal opportunity policy that didn't allow LGBT service members to seek redress for discrimination. Transgender service members still can't serve openly for fear of getting kicked out. So I started getting active around those issues, because it just hurt me to see this kind of stuff happening and very few higher-ups seem to care. And as an officer, I had a little more pull and can do a little more. And I tried to get Pride Month recognized on my base, which was difficult for it than I thought I needed to, considering the president had already acknowledged it, as well as the Department of Defense, both of which the military answers to. But still, I had to fight. And I tried to fight for inclusion of sexual orientation protections in the Equal Opportunity Program, which was, again, a tooth and nail struggle that didn't really get finished until after I was out. But all that made me realize that we couldn't even respect our own service members and respect their basic humanity and dignity, which then made me think, well, if we're not even doing that to our own peers, what are we doing in Afghanistan and Iraq? How are we treating Muslims over there? We're demonizing them over here. We must be doing terrible things, which, of course, if you read in the news, you would see how high the death toll was, how many civilians were killed. So I put those all together and our inability to understand the basic humanity of even our own, you know, Marines, sailors, soldiers, and figured that we couldn't be using violence in another country appropriately. I didn't trust anybody in my command or anybody all the way up to the president to do that. So I filed for conscientious objector status in the middle of 2014 and was discharged in May of 2015 as a conscientious objector. And I found my way, you know, throughout 2015, I got involved with Veterans for Peace. And then early this year, I was invited down to Florida in February, not Florida, South Carolina, Myrtle Beach, for a Donald Trump fundraiser that Ramon was at as well. And it was kind of an impromptu thing, but we got people organized, we got there, and that's where the Vets versus Hate hashtag was born, and Veterans Challenge Islamophobia was also just starting then as well. So that was my first action with the campaigns. And since then, I've just been involved because I live so close to New York City and Trump is there frequently. In between now and then, I've been going to several Trump fundraisers. I busted into one of them, and we've been protesting outside of several Trump events. And then when I heard that they were hiring regional organizers, I thought, wow, I mean, the idea of working even more intensely on this and with other like-minded people across the country was just an incredible opportunity, and luckily VFP saw fit to put me in this position. So I think that's the long and short of it.
Yeah, it's very good, very good. One thing I want to ask Nate a question, and it that ever since I realized training with this whole anti-Muslim feeling and movement within the United States, how has it affected them? And I don't know if you have siblings, but how has that affected them?
No, that's actually a really great question. I know, you know, my mom in particular, you know, she has an accent. When you speak with her on the phone, you know, you can tell that it's, you know, Middle Eastern accent. Just, you know, sort of a couple of things, you know, she was calling into customer service, I think, for her cable service a couple of years ago. And, you know, there were some issues. The representative got very frustrated and said something to the effect of, maybe you should go back to your own country.
Ooh.
We don't want you here, and things like that. And so she felt, you know, she felt sort of an imperative to respond, you know, my son's a veteran and he served in the military here, and, you know, that sort of a thing. And I think there's been little things like that. The women in my family don't wear the hijab, the headscarf. Mm-hmm. I know that some friends do. And they've had, they've been stared at. They've even, in the younger cases where they're in school, have had people try to tear the headscarf off.
Oh, wow.
That's horrible.
And there's a general feeling of fear, I think, among family members. We were just talking about this last night with my uncle, that God forbid if something, you know, on a larger scale were to happen in the U.S. with regard to some sort of an incident, terrorist incident or, you know, whatever, that, you know, the fear is that, you know, they're going to just come for everyone and put everyone in camps. That's what he was sort of expressing to me. Then he says they did it to the Japanese in World War II. Well, what makes you think they won't do it to us? And I think there's just a general fear. There's a sense that you have to hide who you are. And of course, being Muslim is self-declared, but at this point, you know, the information age, or, you know, so I think there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of apprehension about, you know, being able to live your life fully. So I think that's generally how it feels.
Wow, that's a tough way to live, even believing like that. And Ramon, how about you? How about your family? How's it been towards your family? Is your wife and your children, are they Muslim also?
Well, my son, who's 7, he is Muslim, but my daughter, who's 15, and my wife, they're both Catholic.
Oh.
And, you know, the entirety of my family is Catholic. You know, me and my son are the only Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents worry because me being Muslim and being an activist, that's going to draw attention, which it has, like, in the past. You know, there was an investigation of a fellow Muslim that I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the FBI contacted my mom, and my mom's, like, worried that I'm, you know, they're being taken to jail, or what happened, what am I doing? And my dad's like,
maybe you should not be Muslim or stop saying that you're Muslim, or maybe not, you know, be an activist. He's like, man, because they're gonna come for you, and it's like, you know, you're not doing anything wrong, but still, because you're Muslim, you know, something's gonna happen. And so they worry about the legal aspects of it, because that's how they experience it. They don't experience it with, you know, getting told, like, derogatory thing. As far as the Muslims, you know, they have to experience derogatory remark of being Mexican immigrants.
Right.
Not the Muslim aspect of it.
Yeah.
That's how they worry. And then my wife's in the Air Force, and, she's having conversations with coworkers, and, you know, they talk mainly about Muslims, and it's, you know, not really, because, you know, she's Latina, she's Mexican-American like myself, and, you know, they'll talk some bad stuff about Muslims, and she'll be like, you know, my husband and my son are Muslim. And she sees it as, like, she feels like people are going to end up trying to hurt my son as a result in society. If it continues to go forward, she feels like, wow, I'm going to have to really defend my son, you know.
I think we're having a little bit of a hard time hearing you, Ramon. Could you speak more directly into the phone?
Yeah, we're having a little trouble hearing you.
Oh, sorry. How about now?
That's good.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, with you're getting hit two ways. One is being a Muslim, for one, and with what's going on in this country right now, with the political stuff on being Hispanic and the way that all this stuff about, you know, kicking Hispanics out of the country, you're getting hit both ways. Does that in your children and your father?
I mean, as far as like worrying about that, I mean, it's an issue that here within the Latino community or the Mexican community that people are seeing it, but it's like, they see it in the politics, but they don't see it like in everyday life, because even where we live is predominantly Mexican American, so you're not really getting discriminated against. You always see it in the news and stuff like that, but everybody's like, ain't nothing gonna happen, you know, like it's all politics, you know, this person will win or that person will win, but at the end of the day, they're not gonna do nothing to us. You know, we're so many, and mm-hmm. you know, they need us. It's also that thing, like, man, we help build this country.
You're darn right.
And try and,
you bet.
Know, kick us out. You know, so that's how you know my family sees it and stuff like that.
Good. I'm glad because I'm glad. I'm glad they feel that way.
I wanted to talk to Jake about some things that we were speaking about yesterday. You gave me a really good idea, that has involved reaching out to the Muslim community in your area. Do you want to talk about the thing that you did?
Sure. This is Jake. I think, like most people, on Sunday, as I was, you know, hearing the news and seeing the reports, I was feeling pretty helpless, especially as an organizer now in this campaign against anti-Muslim bigotry. I just knew there would be backlash to come, and I just was sitting there thinking, well, I'm powerless to prevent that. And I just didn't quite know what to do with myself on top of the tragedy that it was. And I realized that if I was feeling helpless, I'm sure others were feeling helpless as well. So I thought the best thing I could do would be to share my love and support however possible. So I decided to create some kind of like gift basket for Ramadan to drop off at the local masjids and mosques. And I put some fresh fruit, some dates, and some coffee in there, along with a letter just telling who I was, what Veterans Challenge Islamophobia is, a basic statement of, you know, support and solidarity, and just making it clear that, you know, we are there, and if you need anything, to please reach out. And I went around to about, I think, 8 in my local county and surrounding counties and dropped these off. And I got some beautiful responses back from the gesture. And I've actually been invited to several iftars to break fast at some of these masjids. I'm going to a large one on Saturday. It's a big interfaith one where there's going to be hundreds of people, and the mayor of the township will be speaking, and it should be really amazing. And I went to my first one on Tuesday, which was just really an incredible experience. And some of the camaraderie that I felt there, having never even attended one before, was just really, really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that reaching out to the to other communities is definitely a way to show support, and actually a physical gift is I think a pretty powerful gesture of a gift basket. One of the things I'm curious about, I actually wanted to ask Ramon about this, and this has really been interesting to me. I'm really curious about some of the actual protests that you've been to and what you're seeing in your area. What is it like in Dallas? Is it with some of these protests? Because I'm pretty sure Texas is there's a lot of people of color, and then there's a lot of I guess right-wing Republicans too. Do you want to talk about some of those protests?
Some protests have been, you know, well, they've all protests that I've been to, or counter demonstrations I've been to, have been very, you know, aggressive, very hateful, very, like, you know, it wasn't nothing like just holding a sign up in Garland. We were overwhelmed. There was hundreds and hundreds. Pamela Geller, there was the infidel motorcycle club that was there. You had neo-Nazis that were there. And, you know, we had a small group of Muslim activists, and we had, you know, socialist anarchists. We had LGBT community members that came out. We had interfaith allies that came out. And, you know, the police didn't protect us at all. They were, like, off to the side, and, you know, they were walking through our demonstrations, you know, basically, like, you know, trying to antagonize, trying to get us into a fight. You know, that's where somebody, you know, told me that they're going to cut my head off. You know, somebody spit at me. You know, it's like the motorcycles guys do it. You know, they drive up, and then they, you know, do burnouts right in front of us. I mean, we had, you know, kids with us that were, you know, getting overwhelmed by all this smoke. So that's one aspect that I've experienced. And then, you know, Bear, this Islamophobe, you know, open carry organization. They're called Bear, the Bureau of American Islamic Relations, kind of like a mocking of care. And you know, they always protest the mosque with rifles and fatigues, and they're, you know, saying that it's for self defense. And then the founder of that organization contacted my school district. I'm an 8th grade social studies teacher, contacted my school district to tell them that I was a terrorist, and that I shouldn't be teaching 8th graders because one day I was going to go in and shoot up my kids.
Oh.
You know, there was an investigation that was done. Obviously, they found that the claims were they had no weight. There was no bearing. There was false accusations. And, you know, but that's how it is, you know, here in Dallas.
Wow. Wow, that's just horrible. Nate, how about you? Has any violence like that against you guys?
No, I would say that outside, you know, there was the Trump rally, and we have, of course, the notorious Sheriff Joe out here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, during that rally, Sheriff Joe spoke first, and a group of, I believe it was Puente, the Latino activist organization, had shut down the highway. And Sheriff Joe came to sort of introduce Donald Trump. And in that introduction, he was sort of inciting the crowd against activists, and, you know, basically suggesting that activists are un-American and, you know, subhuman and that sort of a thing. He was basically, he seemed to be foaming at the mouth. And when I looked around as we were contemplating and organizing the action that we were going to take in that rally, and I just wanted to make sure that everybody was okay and that everybody was in place, I realized that if these Trump supporters came at us, it would be Sheriff Joe's deputies that we would have to rely on to keep us safe, and that wasn't going to happen. I remember having that instance of fear.
So
it's been important to echo Jake a little bit to, you know, we went to the candlelight vigil with the Phoenix Pride out here, the LGBT community, and you know, just to stand in solidarity and shoulder to shoulder after Orlando, just to let them know that Veterans Challenge Islamophobia is there for them, that I as a Muslim am there. And so that has also been, outside of the rallies and things like that, has also been very important in the last few days.
Right. Is there very many gay veterans in your area, Nate?
You know, I can't speak to that. Mm-hmm. I'm not certain what the demographics are for LGBT veterans. That's actually a very good question.
That's really important, I think, now with what this terror campaign against our brothers and sisters in the gay community, that, you know, that the gay veterans came out and start speaking, and that would be very, very helpful to the...
Very helpful.
Yeah, to our brothers and sisters in the gay community.
Was a Muslim, one of the speakers at the Candlelight Vigil was a beautiful speaker. He was a Muslim brother that was gay himself. And so he was, you know, he really spoke powerfully to the feelings and the sentiment that were in that crowd on behalf of so many different groups that were there. So
I think that's really important that happens, that Muslims support our brothers and sisters, that veterans support our brothers and sisters in the gay community because of what's going on now. Jake, how about you? Do you have any gay veterans working with you?
We've attracted, some of the Marines that I've worked with, they know me from my LGBT advocacy while in.
Right.
Have reached out to me as they've seen me involved with Vets vs. Hate, and they're definitely interested.
Good.
And they aren't all near me, but they're definitely plugging in more and more because they just recognize this as it aligns with them, like it aligns with me.
Right.
And
I wanted to ask you, Jake, really quickly, could you tell people what the hashtag Vets vs. Hate is?
So the hashtag Vets vs. Hate is not attached to an organization. It's not a 501c3 operation like Veterans Challenge Islamophobia. It's called an open container kind of thing. And Vets vs. Hate isn't just about challenging Islamophobia. Right now, it absolutely is the main focus. But it can be used and will be used to target transphobia, to work against misogyny, to work against racism or the militarization of our police force. This is the kind of thing that we hope to grow into a much larger progressive veterans movement that speaks out against just what it says, hate. And, however many manifestations it takes in America, and there certainly are plenty, and I think a lot of vets are starting to wake up and they're starting to be more active, especially because this has been such a bizarre and tumultuous political season. I think they're starting to realize that veterans we can't just afford to sit on the sidelines and take our thank you for your service and just kind of fade away. We fought for something, and just because we got out of the military doesn't mean that we don't still stand for those values and that we shouldn't still try to protect, First Amendment, Second Amendment, Third Amendment rights, whatever. We really owe it to our service and to the American people to stand up for rights when they're being infringed.
Right, right. Did you got, your discharge was for conscious objector, right?
That's right.
Did you get hassled quite a bit being an officer? Did that come into play?
People would have been surprised if it was an enlisted member filing for it. They were shocked that it was an officer because nobody had ever heard of a Marine officer doing that, and I actually haven't either. But I think because I was an officer, and officers are generally just treated better, that's right, and it was also part of my reason for filing, there's just a lot less people that can give me a hard time. So
right.
I definitely did get hassled by a couple, but I made, I just made it clear that there are certain ways that I won't be treated, and I deserve respect regardless of what route I'm taking out of the military.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people respected me for taking a stand in what I believed in. Mm-hmm. And I also wasn't trying to convince people that I was right or make them feel like I didn't respect them because they decided to continue serving. Right. I was just like, this isn't right for me. I cannot do this. I respect your right to do it, but I need to find something else to do because my conscience won't let me do this anymore.
Yeah. While you were in the service, Jake, when you were in the service, were there any gay veterans organizations in the service when you were in?
You know what I'm saying? You mean military?
Active duty military.
Advocacy groups?
Yeah. Active duty military.
Right. So there had been several, but because Don't Ask, Don't Tell had been repealed in 2011, some of them kind of lost their momentum and maybe disintegrated a little bit because the big fight, as they saw it, was over, even though a lot of people didn't understand that the equal opportunity policy hadn't really changed.
Yeah.
And there were still all these blockages and, you know, homophobia and transphobia were still rampant. So those organizations had kind of lost power and momentum. And there's actually one, that I think the biggest one was AMPA, the American Military Partners Association, which is made up of the spouses and family members of LGBT service members.
Well, that's
and
wonderful.
That's an advocacy group that's civilian side, but they have really close ties to the community and the military, and they were a tremendous help.
Oh, great. Angie's got a question.
Well, I wanted to give thanks to Jonathan, who helped to coordinate this. He's one of our Navy vets, and he's really spearheaded getting this together, so I wanted to thank him. I also wanted to thank Salman, who was supposed to be on the radio today, and maybe we can interview him at another time. And I also wanted to let everybody know that Combat Papers is going to be here in Portland at the Portland Art Museum this Friday, which is today. And it is free, 5 to 8 p.m. And there's also the Golden Rule Sailboat event that's going to be at the Clark Public Utilities Community Room in Vancouver, Washington. That's going to be June 1st.
Yeah. You know, we're out of time here, and I really want to thank Ramon and Nate and Jake for coming on and talking about this, because it's really an important movement that you folks are doing. I think that you're very, very brave to stand up and take these stands. And I just want you to know that you have a whole lot of support in the veterans community out here. Veterans for Peace, Vietnam Veterans Against the War, as you know, Iraqi Veterans Against the War. You have a lot of support, and I want to thank all three of you for coming on the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, it's our pleasure, guys. It's our pleasure. Thanks a lot, and we'll definitely be in contact with you guys.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks, guys. And Angie just brought up, I wanted to talk a little bit about that ship, too. What's the name of the boat?
The Golden Rule.
The Golden Rule, where the Multnomah County Sheriff rammed that boat. Rammed it. The boat that was in the Willamette River. That's just really disgusting that they would do that. And Ramon and Nate and Jake really have to fight against Islamophobia is so important. And to fight against this attack against our brothers and our sisters in the gay community is so important that we all stand beside them and do everything we can to help them, help our brothers and sisters. And like we said, that Sunday is the Gay Pride Parade, and I hope that there's so many of you out there, and I'm going to go, and let's just show the world that we are, you know, one family, and we are going to take care of each other. And we'll be back on Friday, July 15th at 9 a.m., here on KBOO 90.7 FM. And I'm really glad that Angie's back. I missed her a lot. And I'm glad she's back to help me out. And there it is.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Rogue Farm Corp's Happy Hour Open House Friday, June 17th